Chapter 97. At length turned to go away, after spending in liquor one half of the money on which, perhaps, his daughter's life depended. The right sort of night for our friends in hiding, Master Warden, apostrophe whispered the other. Sit down here, apostrophe said the one who had spoken first, drawing him into a corner. We have been looking arter the young un. We came to tell him, it's all right now, but we couldn't find him cause we hadn't got the precise direction. But that ain't strange, for I don't think he knowed it himself, when he come to London, did he? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, he didn't, apostrophe replied the father. The two men exchanged glances. There's a vessel down at the docks, to sail at midnight, when it's high water, apostrophe resumed the first speaker, and we'll put him on board. His passage is taken in another name, and what's better than that, it's paid for. It's lucky we met you. Apostrophe, very, apostrophe said the second. Capital luck, apostrophe said the first, with a wink to his companion. Great, apostrophe replied the second, with a slight nod of intelligence. Another glass here, quick said the first speaker. And in 5 minutes more, the father had unconsciously yielded up his own son into the hangman's hands. Slowly and heavily the time dragged along, as the brother and sister, in their miserable hiding place, listened in anxious suspense to the slightest sound. At length, a heavy footstep was heard upon the stair. It approached nearer, it reached the landing, and the father staggered into the room. The girl saw that he was intoxicated, and advanced with the candle in her hand to meet him. She stopped short, gave a loud scream, and fell senseless on the ground. She had caught sight of the shadow of a man reflected on the floor. They both rushed in, and in another instant the young man was a prisoner, and handcuffed. Very quietly done, apostrophe said one of the men to his companion, thanks to the old man. Lift up the girl, Tom, come, come, it's no use crying, young woman. It's all over now, and can't be helped. Apostrophe, the young man stooped for an instant over the girl, and then turned fiercely round upon his father, who had reeled against the wall, and was gazing on the group with drunken stupidity. Listen to me, father, apostrophe he said, in a tone that made the drunkard's flesh creep. My brother's blood, and mine, is on your head. I never had kind look, or word, or care, from you, and alive or dead, I never will forgive you. Die when you will, or how, I will be with you. I speak as a dead man now, and I warn you, father, that as surely as you must one day stand before your Maker, so surely shall your children be there, hand in hand, to cry for judgment against you. Apostrophe he raised his manacled hands in a threatening attitude, fixed his eyes on his shrinking parent, and slowly left the room, and neither father nor sister ever beheld him more, on this side of the grave. When the dim and misty light of a winter's morning penetrated into the narrow court, and struggled through the bedroom window of the wretched room, Warden awoke from his heavy sleep, and found himself alone. He rose, and looked round him. The old flock mattress on the floor was undisturbed. Everything was just as he remembered to have seen it last. And there were no signs of anyone, save himself, having occupied the room during the night. He inquired of the other lodgers, and of the neighbors, but his daughter had not been seen or heard of. He rambled through the streets, and scrutinized each wretched face among the crowds that thronged them, with anxious eyes. But his search was fruitless, and he returned to his garret when night came on, desolate and weary. For many days he occupied himself in the same manner, but no trace of his daughter did he meet with, and no word of her reached his ears. At length he gave up the pursuit as hopeless. He had long thought of the probability of her leaving him, and endeavoring to gain her bread in quiet, elsewhere. She had left him at last to starve alone. He ground his teeth, and cursed her. He begged his bread from door to door. Every halfpenny he could wring from the pity or credulity of those to whom he addressed himself, was spent in the old way. A year passed over his head, The roof of a jail was the only one that had sheltered him for many months. He slept under archways, and in brickfields anywhere, where there was some warmth or shelter from the cold and rain. But in the last stage of poverty, disease, and houseless want, he was a drunkard still. At last, one bitter night, he sunk down on a doorstep faint and ill. The premature decay of vice and profligacy had worn him to the bone. His cheeks were hollow and livid, his eyes were sunken, and their sight was dim. His legs trembled beneath his weight, and a cold shiver ran through every limb. And now the long-forgotten scenes of a misspent life crowded thick and fast upon him. He thought of the time when he had a home, a happy, cheerful home, and of those who peopled it and flocked about him then, until the forms of his elder children seemed to rise from the grave and stand about him so plain, so clear, and so distinct they were that he could touch and feel them. Looks that he had long forgotten were fixed upon him once more. Voices long since hushed in death sounded in his ears like the music of village bells. But it was only for an instant. The rain beat heavily upon him, and cold and hunger were gnawing at his heart again. He rose, and dragged his feeble limbs a few paces further. The street was silent and empty. The few passengers who passed by, at that late hour, hurried quickly on, and his tremulous voice was lost in the violence of the storm. Again that heavy chill struck through his frame, and his blood seemed to stagnate beneath it. He coiled himself up in a projecting doorway, and tried to sleep. But sleep had fled from his dull and glazed eyes. His mind wandered strangely, but he was awake, and conscious. The well-known shout of drunken mirth sounded in his ear, the glass was at his lips, the board was covered with choice rich food, they were before him. He could see them all, he had but to reach out his hand, and take them, and, though the illusion was reality itself, he knew that he was sitting alone in the deserted street, watching the raindrops as they pattered on the stones, that death was coming upon him by inches, and that there were none to care for or help him. Suddenly he started up, in the extremity of terror. He had heard his own voice shouting in the night air, he knew not what, or why. Hark! A groan. Another. His senses were leaving him. Half-formed and incoherent words burst from his lips, and his hands sought to tear and lacerate his flesh. He was going mad, and he shrieked for help till his voice failed him. He raised his head and looked up the long dismal street. He recollected that outcasts like himself, condemned to wander day and night in those dreadful streets, had sometimes gone distracted with their own loneliness. He remembered to have heard many years before that a homeless wretch had once been found in a solitary corner, sharpening a rusty knife to plunge into his own heart, preferring death to that endless, weary wandering to and fro. In an instant his resolve was taken, his limbs received new life. He ran quickly from the spot, and paused not for breath until he reached the riverside. He crept softly down the steep stone stairs that lead from the commencement of Waterloo Bridge, down to the water's level. He crouched into a corner, and held his breath, as the patrol passed. Never did prisoner's heart throb with the hope of liberty and life half so eagerly as did that of the wretched man at the prospect of death. The watch passed close to him, but he remained unobserved, and after waiting till the sound of footsteps had died away in the distance, he cautiously descended, and stood beneath the gloomy arch that forms the landing place from the river. The tide was in, and the water flowed at his feet. The rain had ceased, the wind was lulled, and all was, for the moment, still and quiet, so quiet that the slightest sound on the opposite bank, even the rippling of the water against the barges that were moored there, was distinctly audible to his ear. The stream stole languidly and sluggishly on. Strange and fantastic forms rose to the surface and beckoned him to approach. Dark gleaming eyes peered from the water, and seemed to mock his hesitation, while hollow murmurs from behind urged him onwards. He retreated a few paces, took a short run, desperate leap, and plunged into the river. Not 5 seconds had passed when he rose to the water's surface, but what a change had taken place in that short time, in all his thoughts and feelings. Life in any form, poverty, misery, starvation, anything but death. He fought and struggled with the water that closed over his head, and screamed in agonies of terror. The curse of his own son rang in his ears. The shore but 1 foot of dry ground, he could almost touch the step. 1 hand's breadth nearer, and he was saved, but the tide bore him onward, under the dark arches of the bridge, and he sank to the bottom. Again he rose, and struggled for life. For one instant, for one brief instant, the buildings on the river's banks, the lights on the bridge through which the current had borne him, the black water, and the fast-flying clouds, were distinctly visible. Once more he sunk, and once again he rose. Bright flames of fire shot up from earth to heaven, and reeled before his eyes, while the water thundered in his ears, and stunned him with its furious roar. A week afterwards the body was washed ashore, some miles down the river, a swollen and disfigured mass. Unrecognized and unpitied, it was borne to the grave, and there it has long since moldered away. Sketches of Young Gentlemen. To the young ladies of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, also the young ladies of the Principality of Wales, and likewise the young ladies resident in the Isles of Guernsey, Jersey, Alderney, and Sark, the humble dedication of their devoted admirer, Shuth, that your dedicator has perused, with feelings of virtuous indignation, a work purporting to be sketches of young ladies, apostrophe written by Quiz, illustrated by Fizz, and published in one volume, square 12mo. That after an attentive and vigilant perusal of the said work, your dedicator is humbly of opinion that so many libels upon your honorable sex were never contained in any previously published work, in 12mo or any other mo. That in the title page and preface to the said work, your honorable sex are described and classified as animals, and although your dedicator is not at present prepared to deny that you are animals, still he humbly submits that it is not polite to call you so. That in the aforesaid preface, your honorable sex are also described as troglodytes, which, being a hard word, may, for aught your honorable sex or your dedicator can say to the contrary, be an injurious and disrespectful appellation. That the author of the said work applied himself to his task in malice prepense, and with wickedness aforethought, a fact which, your dedicator contends, is sufficiently demonstrated by his assuming the name of Quiz, which, your dedicator submits, denotes a foregone conclusion, and implies an intention of quizzing. That in the execution of his evil design, the said Quiz, or author of the said work, must have betrayed some trust or confidence reposed in him by some members of your honorable sex, otherwise he never could have acquired so much information relative to the manners and customs of your honorable sex in general. That actuated by these considerations, and further moved by various slanders and insinuations respecting your honorable sex contained in the said work, square 12mo, entitled Sketches of Young Ladies, apostrophe your dedicator ventures to produce another work, square 12mo, entitled Sketches of Young Gentlemen, apostrophe of which he now solicits your acceptance and approval. That as the young ladies are the best companions of the young gentlemen, so the young gentlemen should be the best companions of the young ladies, and extending the comparison from animals, to quote the disrespectful language of the said Quiz, to inanimate objects, your dedicator humbly suggests that such of your honorable sex as purchased the bane should possess themselves of the antidote, and that those of your honorable sex who were not rash enough to take the first should lose no time in swallowing the last, prevention being in all cases better than cure, as we are informed upon the authority, not only of general acknowledgement, but also of traditionary wisdom. That with reference to the said bane and antidote, your dedicator has no further remarks to make than are comprised in the printed directions issued with Dr. Morrison's pills, namely, that whenever your honorable sex take 25 of number 1, you will be pleased to take 50 of number 2 without delay. And your dedicator shall ever pray, and see, the bashful young gentleman. We found herself seated at a small dinner party the other day, opposite a stranger of such singular appearance and manner, that he irresistibly attracted our attention. This was a fresh-colored young gentleman, with as good a promise of light whisker as one might wish to see, and possessed of a very velvet-like, soft-looking countenance. We do not use the latter term invidiously, but merely to denote a pair of smooth, plump, highly colored cheeks of capacious dimensions, and a mouth rather remarkable for the fresh hue of the lips than for any marked or striking expression it presented. His whole face was suffused with a crimson blush, and bore that downcast, timid, retiring look, which betokens a man ill at ease with himself. There was nothing in these symptoms to attract more than a passing remark, but our attention had been originally drawn to the bashful young gentleman, on his first appearance in the drawing room above stairs, into which he was no sooner introduced, than making his way towards us who were standing in a window, and wholly neglecting several persons who warmly accosted him, he seized our hand with visible emotion, and pressed it with a convulsive grasp for a good Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.